T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We have a very special guest, which we're going to welcome on for the entire course of this hour. It's interesting, in the world of news, if you work at a television or a radio station, this live event from 1984, I believe it was, is one of those moments that are studied in college courses. It's one of those moments that was caught on live television and was watched all around the world. It's still something that is quite an infamous moment. And it goes back to a story that happened back in 1983. And to tell that story here tonight, because of his story in the book that's out now called Why, Gary, Why.
Welcome to Profiles. From entertainers to athletes, political leaders to entrepreneurs, Profiles gives you an insight into what has made these unique personalities who and what they are today. Now, Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Jody Ploysche, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX. What a fascinating story. It was something that I remember learning when I was going through college. And I think a lot of people that go through any type of journalism classes, they may have seen this footage. I'm sure a lot of people have seen the footage back from 1984. I wanted you to give me your story dating back into 1983. And I know just so we can kind of catch everyone up to understand what happened when you were, was it 9 or 10 years old?
I was 10 years old.
Okay. 10 years old. I watched the ESPN segment on you, and they had it was a good 15 minutes where I think they were able to condense this whole story down, but it's well worth the full hour that we're going to spend on it tonight. So back in that time, and let me make sure I'm getting the origin. You were just like any other 10-year-old. You're looking for activities. Your parents were looking for activities to do, and you got involved in karate at that time.
Well, actually, I was already involved in football, basketball, softball, soccer. It was my little brother that my parents were interested in getting involved in activities because he was not involved in any of those sports. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, when they handed out the flyer to take karate lessons, like 10 karate lessons at school, mm-hmm. I threw the flyer in the garbage can. Mm-hmm. My little brother brought his flyer home, and that's how my parents found out about it.
So at that point, you started to participate in these karate classes, and there was a certain instructor there that becomes part of the story. Can you explain what happened?
Well, the first instructor did like 2 lessons, and then never showed back up. So the names were turned over to a karate instructor named Jeff Doucette, who had this up-and-coming karate school, and he'd said that he would honor the remaining lessons because the names were turned over. So we ended up taking karate from him, and after a couple of lessons, he talked about he had a fighting team, and they would compete in karate tournaments. Like, if you think about the movie Karate Kid, where Danielson's, you know, in that tournament, we fought in those. And so he told my parents that, you know, normally before they go fight in a tournament, I think they were going to New Orleans this particular weekend, they go to the movies. So my mother, he asked if we could go. My mother called her brother who worked for the sheriff's department and said, could you run a background check on this guy to make sure he's cool? He wants to take my kids to the movies. It was my older brother, me, and my younger brother. And he wants to take the kids to the movies. You know, is he a threat? And my uncle, you know, apparently or allegedly, went and looked it up and told my mother, nah, he's fine, maybe a couple, you know, tickets or whatever. So my mother felt comfortable letting us go to the movies. Mm-hmm. After the movie, it was a movie called They Call Me Bruce, so it was a karate movie.
Okay.
So after the movie, we went to Chuck E. Cheese.
Mm-hmm.
My cousin just so happened to be having a birthday party there, so Jeff got to meet my family. You know, he knew my family, but he got to meet my extended family, my cousins, my aunts, my uncles, and we're at Chuck E. Cheese. We're playing. We're doing all the video games. We're jumping around. And he just seemed like this wonderful person that was taking kids to the movie, going to Chuck E. Cheese. He just seemed like a great person, mm-hmm. like a fun person for kids to hang out with. boy, was that wrong.
Yeah. And part of the story happens to be the trust that your parents had in him. From what I understand, they, you know, they helped him out. They gave him some clothes. They understand he was maybe down on his luck. In fact, they invited him over to your grandparents' house for dinner. So they were showing some interest to thank him for showing interest in the kids and actually putting some time into the kids.
Yeah, every Saturday night, my parents would have my aunts and uncles and my cousins over, and they would play a board game called Password. Eventually, it turned into Trivial Pursuit at the time, you know, back in '84, but it was a game called Password. Well, he was over hanging out with the family, and I think he may have even spent the night. I don't think he was. Well, you know, he was actually, I believe, Muslim by this time, but my parents didn't know it. Well, my father, the next morning, went and dropped him off at the karate school. Well, when he did, because we were going to go to my grandparents for dinner. I guess it was that afternoon, and my father started crying. Like, he's like, he's so pitiful. Mm. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, he just has nobody. He's just, you know, lived at the karate school. And so my father turned the car around, went, you know, honked the horn, said, hey, look, you know what, why don't you come with us? So he took him back to the house, let him shower, gave him fresh clothes, and he came with us to my grandparents' house. So my dad, you know, obviously was sympathetic towards him at this point, not knowing what he was doing.
You said there briefly, at this point, you believe that this instructor, if you remember correctly, already started to sexually abuse you.
Yes. By this time, he had already started sexually abusing me.
When your parents started taking some interest, and of course, he was building some trust with them, none of this was brought up at any point. And I think a lot of people always ask, you know, why wasn't that brought up?
I think the horrible answer is that, you know, pedophiles and child molesters are good at what they do. And they don't just groom the child. They groom the parents. They groom the family. They groom the people around them. And, you know, whereas Jeff seemed like this great guy, it was almost like if I would have told, it would have upset my parents, you know, Jeff would have gotten in trouble. And I didn't want any of that.
Joining us is, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
Jody Plochet is joining us in his books called Why, Gary, Why? It's the Jody Plochet story, who we're speaking to this hour on KMOX. There's a lot of details and twists to the story of your life around that period of time. You're 10 years old. You have the karate instructor that is gaining trust of your parents. And at a certain point, he gains so much trust that your parents allow him to take you and some other people, a part of this karate school, out of town for different tournaments. Is that what was the continuation of the next step for him?
Yeah, that was the first karate trip my brothers went on. I didn't go on. I had a basketball tournament in New Orleans, but we heard the stories about how great it was. They went to Houston and it was just so much fun. They went to, you know, ice skating and Astroworld. And so of course we wanted to go. Well, the next time a karate tournament came up in Houston, me, my older brother, younger brother, and my father went on a karate trip to Houston with us. So, I mean, it wasn't like Jeff was like, no, you can't come. I need to be alone with your children. I mean, he's like, yeah, come on. Another dad came with us. So, I mean, it seemed completely above ground, even though it was just kind of a way to where he was, again, grooming and seducing the children and the parents to make him think that he was a good guy.
In plain sight, really. How long was Jeff molesting you?
He started testing my boundaries probably February, March of '83. He didn't start, you know, physically abusing me until April. And then it escalated in May. I mean, I don't know what kind of detail. I mean, if you get the book, you'll get the details in the book.
Yeah.
But, you know, it escalated in May. And so from May until February of '84, when he kidnapped me, that's how long it went on.
I want to talk about the kidnapping next and what happened after the kidnapping, and you've agreed to stand for the full hour. The book out now, it's called Why, Gary, Why? And it's definitely a story that had the entire nation talking in 1984. And it's a story that is still studied today. I remember talking about this in journalism school when I was going to school and taking classes at Central Michigan University. They still talk about this. This video clip is one of the most infamous clips when it comes to news coverage of live events. Jody Plochet joining us, and you've agreed to stay the full hour. We're going to continue and hear more. And if you got to hear what happens next. This is the point where the trust level gets so high And it's a point where Jody is kidnapped and the karate instructor takes him to California. That's coming up next on KMOX.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Joining us here, Jody Plache, and he is someone that wrote a book about his story. It's called Why, Gary, Why? The Jody Plache Story. Right before we went to break, we were talking about the moments that led into this. You're 10 years old. You're being sexually abused by your karate instructor for months. His name's Jeff. He's gained the trust of your family. And you've gone on these trips, karate trips, things like that. And it becomes, again, the trust is there. Your parents allow you to go on these trips. There's other kids around, but you're being abused. It gets to the point where Jeff kidnaps you, takes you from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, to California. What did he do? How did he kidnap you, and how did he get you to California?
Well, he owed money, and he had a court date coming up because he had came up with this idea to have like an LSU bandana called a tiger rag, and you know the business deal went bad. He ended up, I guess, being sued and was looking. I want to say embezzlement. I don't know exactly what the charges were because I was, you know, again, 11 years old. But he told me, he said, look, he said, if I can't borrow this money to pay this guy back, he goes, I'm leaving town, I'm going to California, and I'm taking you with me. So that's a point where I almost told. And I was just like, hopefully he'll get the money. I wasn't thinking that, you know, he actually was really going to kidnap me. Then he came to the house Sunday morning, February 19th. He asked my mother, hey, June, can I borrow your car? He said his brother dropped him off. And we had a karate student whose parents were building a brand new house. Well, Jeff's brother owned a carpet business, and Jeff told my mother, I got to go see if the carpet was delivered. So he said, Jody, come ride with me. So he asked my mother, can Jody come? And she said, yeah, you know, don't keep him going all day. You know, he's at school in the morning or what have you. And we took off. Well, we didn't go towards the kid's house. We went towards another town. I said, well, where are we going? He said, we're going to my brother Mike's house. I'm getting some stuff, and we're going to Port Arthur, Texas. So he drove from Baton Rouge to Port Arthur, Texas, that Sunday. That Sunday night, my mother was made aware that we were in Port Arthur, and my mother was like, you need to get my son home in the morning. Well, that Monday, we went to a town called Vinton, Texas. He went to his uncle's to try to borrow money now to take me to California so we can get a bus ticket. I don't know how he got the money or how he ended up getting the money, but he got two bus tickets. We left that Tuesday, I want to say around noon. Well, it just so happened my mother and sheriff deputies were heading to Port Arthur that Tuesday as well. We probably left town an hour before they got there.
Wow.
And they were just behind the scent. We took a bus from Port Arthur, Orange, Texas, actually. And we took that bus all the way to Los Angeles. We got to Los Angeles around probably 4 or 5 a.m. on that Thursday.
You're 11, you're going to a different state, your parents are trying to find you, police are now involved at this point, he's on the run, he knows that people are trying to find him. How long were you in California before police caught on into where his location was?
Well, like I said, we got there probably Thursday, if the Sunday was the 19th, do the math, I was gone a complete week before I called my mother to let her know I was okay.
Wow.
So she had no clue where I was, hadn't heard from me in a week, knew I was on the run with this. At the time, she didn't know he was a pedophile or a child molester, but with this guy she knew was, I want to say, unstable at this point. And, finally, she let me call her. And at that time, we were at the Samoa Motel in Anaheim, California, which was at the corner of Harbor and Cotella. It's now America's Best Value Hotel. And it's literally around the corner from Disneyland, a block from Disneyland.
Okay. You're there in the hotel. You were able to call. Did he give you the okay to call, or is this something you had to sneak out and do?
No, he gave me the okay. He said, look, call your mom, let her know you're okay.
Okay.
So over the next couple of days, you know, the sheriff's department recorded probably like 9 to 10 hours of conversations between me, Jeff, my mother. Jeff was telling her we were in New York, and was saying to meet me in New York, but he was just saying that to throw her off the trail, not because we were in New York, obviously. Yeah.
So at this point, the police are recording, tracking, and they were able to find you, and they were able to find Jeff in California. They finally find what hotel and what room, and they get in there, and they arrest Jeff and they take you to safety. What happens in that moment when the police arrive, bust in? Tell me about your feelings. Were you confused, or what was going through your mind?
I was scared. Huh. I was on the bed sitting closest to the door, and all of a sudden, you know, we kind of hear a knock, a key kind of jiggling in the door, and I'm thinking, like, what's going on? And all of a sudden, that door busts open, and, I mean, it seemed like, you know, 30 police officers came busting through, guns at me, guns on him, guns in my face, guns everywhere. And I'm like, oh, my, I wasn't expecting it. And so the one cop walks around the corner of the bed, and he tells Jeffy, I ought to punch you in your, you know, your GD mouth.
Yeah.
And then they took me out, and that's the last I saw Jeff. I never saw Jeff again. And I remember sitting out there shaking and shivering, and they were asking me, are you cold? I said, no, I'm scared. And they're like, oh, you don't need to be scared. I'm like, well, I'm not scared now. I'm scared from what just happened.
Yeah.
With all those guns in my face. And they then took me from there to the Anaheim Police Department. They questioned me for a couple of hours. You know, did he touch you? Where did you sleep? Where did y'all sleep in? And I denied everything.
Wow. Okay.
That I went from the Anaheim Police Department to the hospital, which that's what I knew was going to basically ultimately be the end of Jeff, because I knew the hospital report would come back with positive proof that he had been sexually abusing me. At the time, it wasn't DNA, but if you can imagine, they found what would be the equivalent to DNA inside of me. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I knew he was going to get in trouble. From there, I went to this like home for neglected and abused kids, stayed the night, and then the next evening, about 1 o'clock in the morning, my dad bought a plane ticket for me to fly from LAX to New Orleans, and I got back home March 1st.
You're back on March 1st after the flight comes in, and again, we're talking and spending time this hour with Jody Ploche, and the new book's called Why, Gary, Why? The Jody Ploche Story. Now, you're back on a plane, you're flying in, and you're flying back. Were there police officers with you flying back for comfort, or are you alone in the plane at this point?
I'm alone at the plane by myself.
With your thoughts?
First time ever on a plane. The sad thing was, I was kind of excited because I'd never flown before. And I'm like, all right, this is going to be great. So I'm sitting, I got me a window seat. I'm all excited. I'm sitting on the plane. We take off, and then we turn, and all I have is the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah.
I'm on the Pacific Ocean side of the plane, so all I have is darkness. I can look across the plane, and all I can see is lights. And I was like, that stinks.
You got the wrong side. You're living in the moment at this point. You're just living and trying to process, even though it's hard to at the age of 11, everything that's going on. So you make it back. Your parents are there waiting for you. And at that moment, do they know the extent of what your karate instructor Jeff has done to you?
No, but at this point, some facts had been revealed to them where they highly suspected what had been going on. But when I returned back, I get off the plane, I'm walking through the airport. Jeff had dyed my hair black, and I get about 10 feet from my mom and dad, and they don't recognize me.
Oh, wow.
And I see the news camera.
Yeah.
And I was not real happy to see the news camera there. It was like 6 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And my dad, when he was younger, he worked at that news station as a cameraman. So he contacted the news people and said, look, my son's coming back. If y'all want to film his return. And so they did. And I remember telling my mother, like, what are they doing here? And she's like, your daddy called him. And I'm like, oh, and she's like, smile and act like you're happy. And I literally, you can see the video, if you watch the E60, you can see her lean over and kind of go in my ear, and then you can see me put this little fake smile on my face. Mm. And then the news reporter, John Pastorek, who's still at the same station this many years later, you know, he says, what do you think about all this? I'm like, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, what should I think about all this?
Jody Ploche joining us, and at this point, you have the karate instructor, Jeff, is arrested. They send some officers from Louisiana, Baton Rouge, to extradite him back to face the charges. And on the way back, cameras were there as well to catch the moment. He comes off the plane, walks through the terminal to show here is this person that just did this to Jody. It was quite a big news story at the time. He's in handcuffs. He has an officer on each side. How many times have you watched the video of what was about to happen next?
I couldn't tell you. I'll tell you what, I wish I had a nickel for every time I've seen it.
Can I give a play-by-play and kind of explain what happened next to the audience here?
Well, I'll tell you what, let's go back a week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I was brought back March 1st. Jeff was brought back March 16th. So the Friday before, I think it was March 9th because it's my sister's birthday, Mike Barnett, who was with the Sheriff's Department, who's that's the first person my mother called. He's the one that was recording the phone call. I mean, he's the one that was the point. If you look at the dedication in the book, Mike Barnett, it's dedicated to my mother, Mike Barnett, because Mike Barnett actually was incredible. So he came over and he told my mother and father that the hospital report had came back positive as far as Jeff molesting me. And so my dad had a week to kind of stew on this. And I think my dad's, you know, the words out of his mouth was, I'm going to kill him. Mm-hmm. Like most parents would say.
Like any father would.
Yeah. And so when Mike went out to California to get Jeff, my mother was worried about daddy killing him. And Mike Barnett told my mother, he said, look, he said, June, I've been protecting prisoners way before Gary decided to become a hitman. So you don't have to worry about anything. Well, that was when Mike went out there March 15th, and I guess they flew back the 16th. So they arrived in Baton Rouge, and this is the play-by-play you're looking for. So they arrived in Baton Rouge at 9 o'clock, at around 9 p.m., 9:08, I think, is what the police report said. Mm-hmm. And my dad had learned from someone at the news station that – and actually, the cameraman who worked for the news station is actually a U.S. attorney in Missouri. I mailed him a book today.
Oh, how about that?
And yeah, and my dad had learned that he was coming back, and, you know, at 9 o'clock. Well, my dad really didn't know what he was going to do, but he did have a gun, and it was in his boot. And he went to a bank of payphones, and he was actually talking to his best friend.
No, he was actually – it wasn't just for show. He was at the – you know, today you'll never see a phone booth or any type of bank of payphones anymore. But he's standing there, is actually on the phone talking to someone.
He was on the phone talking to his best friend. His best friend had called the sheriff's department and said, look, you know, I need to get in touch with Mike Barnett. My friend's at the airport. He's about to shoot this prisoner. And the guy's like, oh, let me see what I can do. Well, daddy sees Mike Barnett come walking out, and he doesn't see Jeff. And he thinks, okay, well, they must have taken him out back. He tells his friend, I think they took him out back. Well, all of a sudden, the lights on the camera came on. Mm-hmm. And that signaled to my father, okay, he's coming. Well, he could look through the corner of his sunglasses, and he could see him walking. And he used the lights, the shadow of the lights, so he knew when the lights got parallel to him, he knew to turn around. So that's why if you see the video, he literally turns around at the exact moment he's coming past him. He still has the phone receiver in his hand. Underneath his arm, he pulls the trigger and kills him.
He was walking handcuffed side by side with the other officers. I don't know how he was able to aim and get that done as quickly as he did. It looked like he had a disguise on because he looked different than normal. And at that point, Jeff in handcuffs goes down immediately and is not moving. The cameras are there to catch it, but it seems to be out of sheer luck. It's right. It's almost like an eclipse. So right when an officer is walking by the lens of the camera is when the gunshot happened. All you see is Jeff on the ground, and you see the officers run towards your dad, and then you start to hear Why Gary Why, which is the name of the book. And Jody, I want to talk to you some more. Do you mind holding on? I want to talk to you about your emotions, everything that went on. And of course, there's so many good things in this book to go over. Jody Plache is joining us here on Overnight America. And I got to say, Jody, this is just such a fascinating and amazing story. And we'll continue. And if you want to check out his book, it goes into much more detail. The events of everything that happened there, not only before but after. It's the Jody Plache story, Why Gary Why. We'll continue with Jody next on KMOX.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Our guest this hour, Jody Plache, in his book, Why Gary Why, the Jody Plache story. Wow, if you've been listening the last half hour, we're now at the point where Jody's father, Gary, at the airport gets a tip that through the extradite orders, Jody's karate instructor, Jeff, who spent months sexually abusing him, ended up kidnapping him, taking him to California, catching him, and then bringing him back. Because Jody's father was there waiting at the airport, talking on a phone, a payphone at a phone bank with a disguise, waiting for the moment that Jeff would walk by. He pulls out a gun, shoots, and kills Jeff right in the airport. Jody, I mean, you have all of this in your book, Why, Gary, Why. At a moment like this, and you said there was about a week or more that passed between when you returned to Louisiana and then when Jeff was extradited back. At any point, did you talk to your parents about what happened? Did the truth come out from you to them at that point?
Yes, because a week before Jeff was returned, that's when the hospital report came back. And once I was confronted with the evidence of the hospital report, that's when I confessed and let my mother know that, yeah, he did. He had been sexually abusing me for, you know, pretty much the last year. And I told her, you know, not to tell Daddy, but Daddy had already known. I didn't know that at the time, or I may have known at the time, but I didn't want Daddy to know any details. But so my dad had about a week to kind of stew over this information that this man had been violating his son for the past year, the man that he trusted, a man that he once gave the shirt off his back to. And I think that my father definitely was not in his right mind, because most people in their right mind don't shoot someone in front of a television camera 10 feet away.
Mm. I don't think anyone in your dad's position as a father finding out something like that happened to your son or daughter can be in the right mind. And I also don't think many people blamed him for what they did. From what I understand, there was a large amount of support for your father. Not that they were out there to say that the violence and the methods were okay, but they totally understood where he was coming from.
We had boxes full of, I don't want to say fan mail, but, you know, mail of support saying, you know, my child had been hurt and I wish I would have done the same thing. And people were sending in money. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, people would put the letter, Gary Ploche, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, USA. They wouldn't even have an address and it would get to where it needed to be.
Wow. Wow. At that point, your dad now arrested and he was going to have a trial of his own. He was charged. And what happened during the course of that case and what things did the judge say?
Well, the first thing that happened was my dad had one of his friends represent him, and that friend ended up not being that great of a friend because the DA was offering my father a deal which basically guaranteed him no jail time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this lawyer would not accept the deal.
Hmm.
The reason being is because he had signed like a TV book deal guaranteeing that would go to trial to make the TV movie or the book deal that much better. Well, word got back to my father and he finally fired that mm-hmm. lawyer and hired another lawyer. Eventually he accepted a deal he pled no contest to manslaughter. He got a 7-year suspended sentence, 5 years probation and 300 hours community service. So he never spent a day in prison.
Never. I think even the judge and anyone involved there, I think they all kind of understood, it's a real terrible situation to be in, and you have those emotions that go through as a parent to realize you put yourself in those shoes and say, tell me you wouldn't have felt any different, and who knows what you're capable of doing when you feel that way. Well, how did your life change after that moment?
It was really kind of weird because once all the smoke cleared and once Daddy got to probation, my life kind of went back to normal, kind of like how it was beforehand. I got back. Jeff made me quit playing football, basketball, baseball, and soccer. So once, all that was done, I got back into baseball, got back into football, I didn't get back into soccer, back into basketball. And, I feel like my high school years were normal. I was a, multi-sport letterman. I was a, all-district quarterback. All district second baseman, and my life just went kind of back to normal.
Wow. That seems unexpected. Just back to, because you were, it was highly covered in the news. I mean, your name and your face was out there, your father and your family. That's surprising to me that anything could go back to normal at a moment like that. What about your friends? How did they treat you after a moment like this?
Well, I think it's a pretty cool little story in the book. Where, like, the first day I returned back to school after I'd been kidnapped, like, my brother had to tell my teachers that Jody's been kidnapped and I was gone because I had to explain why I was at school. So I'm returning back to school. I walk in the gym. Now I'm thinking, okay, it's no big deal. Nothing's going to be going on. I walk in the gym, and all of a sudden, the gym goes quiet. And everybody turns and looks at me walk across the basketball court. And my friends were sitting on the stage across the basketball court. So I had to walk all the way across the basketball court in silence. Literally, it was like,
wow.
I think in a book I've said an E.F. Hutton commercial, if you remember back in the day, you know, when E.F. Hutton talks, people listen. Go to YouTube if you don't know what I'm talking about. You'll see an E.F. Hutton commercial. And I walk up to my friends, and they're just staring at me, and they don't know what to say. Mm. No words are coming out of their mouth. And I look at them, and I felt like, okay, you know what? I got to ease the tension. I said, what? I said, y'all look at me like I've been kidnapped or something. And that's when they realize I'm still the same Jody I was before I was kidnapped.
I think that a lot of people would have a hard time reading what they should do in a situation like that. I think they get a little nervous to say something insensitive. They don't want to do anything that would upset the person. I think that's a pretty common way to handle it. In fact, you've spent the last, 40 minutes with us here talking about it. Does it feel to you that people are still very hesitant to talk to you about what happened so many decades ago?
I don't think now. I think when people are around me, I think I probably make them more uncomfortable than they make me uncomfortable because I'm so honest with it. I mean, if you read my best friend's story, I'll give you just something I did today. So last night I got a friend of mine that lives in Dallas. Well, I told her not to buy the book. I told her I would send her a copy. And I thought I was going to be in Dallas, months ago. But finally I was like, send me your address. Well, she messaged me and she said, if I don't get a touching message, I'm going to throw the book away. Because she's a dear friend, right? Yeah. So what I wrote in her book, when I signed her book, I said, you would be one to want a touching message when this whole book is an anti-touching message. So, I mean, it's just that light humor that I like to do that, lets people know that I'm fine. You can joke, you can cut up, I'm normal.
Wow. Yeah, what I want to do is we have to do one more break, but when we come back, you're someone that travels and you're someone that shares not only this message, but you also talk about, you put a voice to a lot of people that were abused and also had a hard time talking about it. And you give them a lot of strength and hope because they'll look at your story and they could find that strength and hope there too. I want to talk about your message today and what you say to people when you go out and speak, because I know you do a lot of public speaking engagements. Joining us here in for one last time coming up after the break, Jody Plache. And he is someone that wrote a book about his story. It's called Why, Gary, Why? The Jody Plache story, and we're going to continue with him next on KMOX.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Jody Plache is joining us for this final segment, but we've been speaking all hour, and it's about his story in the book that's out now called Why, Gary, Why? What an amazing story. And Jody, again, I want to thank you for spending so much time with us here on KMOX.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So we get to the point where life is getting back to normal, and today you go and you speak to a lot of different groups, you tell your story, but you also give a message. What is your message to the different groups you speak to?
My main message is that if someone goes through something as terrible as being sexually abused as a child, like I was, with the proper support, you can be okay. You can have a normal life. You can get back to normal, it doesn't have to scar you for life. I hate those terms, scarred for life. Oh, you did irreparable damage to this child. This child will never be the same. I had a woman one time tell me that she told her daughter if anyone ever touched her inappropriately sexually, that it doesn't kill a child. It's worse. It kills the child's soul. And I'm like, well, that's the most horrible thing you can tell a kid. Because what if they do get touched? Then they're going to think their soul's dead. So my message is you can be okay. I mean, I want to give victims permission to, grieve. It's okay to grieve. It's okay to say, this stinks. This is terrible. I shouldn't have had to go through that. But you also need to know you can't let that one moment define you. You can't let that one moment ruin the rest of your life. Life is too short.
Wow. Wow. I think one of the questions you're probably asked the most is, why did it take you so long before you told your parents? Why did it go on for months? Why was it until proof was presented to them that you were able to open up? And I'm sure there's a lot of other victims that had the exact same feeling. It was very difficult for them to talk about what was happening.
Well, most of the time, the perpetrator is a trusted adult, a family friend, a family member. It's someone that the parents look up to, whether it's a priest, whether it's a coach, whether it's a karate teacher, whether it's a teacher. I mean, so this is someone that's been entrusted in the child's care, a camp counselor, a scout leader. So most people, like that are abusers, like I said, they're good at what they do, and they come across as someone who would never do something like this. There's a case in Baton Rouge right now where the perpetrator is a law enforcement officer. You know, he was making kiddie porn, molesting kids, and they use that as kind of like their shield, kind of like their protection. And they also test the boundaries. They will test the boundaries. They'll do innocent seeming behaviors like tickling, where if you do fondle a young child and they do say something, you can say it was an accident. And then they just move on to another child. Mm-hmm. So if you read the book, the book is like a manual. It's like a guide. It will educate someone who doesn't know. You will have a better understanding if you read it. And by the way, can I say one thing?
Yeah.
You can get the book on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
It's available on Amazon.com. You can get it paperback, or you can get a digital copy through Kindle.
Mm-hmm.
It's $19.99 paperback. It's $10, or I think it's maybe $9.99 or $10 on Kindle.
Okay.
And you can get it that way. You can go online, order it, and it's print on demand. It'll be there in 2 days.
You know, it's right now has 5-star rating, so 5 out of 5 stars. Everyone that's gone and purchased and read the book has given it a 5-star rating. Well, 4.9 out of 5 stars. So 4 or 5 stars, and people say it's an excellent resource. People look at you as a hero today because you're able to talk about these things, and you've helped a lot of people over the years.
You know, I do have a little connection to St. Louis.
Oh, what's that?
My high school basketball teammate, Dwayne Lewis, he worked for the St. Louis Rams for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was living up in Pennsylvania working at Victim Services, they played the Eagles, I want to say 4 times in Philadelphia, but 3 of the times that they came to town, I worked for the Rams radio station holding the parabolic mic. So I got, you know, a field pass, and I got a $50 check to hold the parabolic mic and stand on the sideline of the Eagles-Rams game. And I've worn the Super Bowl ring.
Oh, how about that? You were you played sports, too. You, from what I understand, a pretty good quarterback.
I was all right. I've put on weight since my high school days, and I ran into my high school football coach a couple of years ago, and he looks at me and goes, "Dang, Ploche." He goes, "I would have a tough time telling people right now that you were one of the best option quarterbacks I've ever seen with the way you look right now." He said, "What happened?" I told him, I said, "You know what you said, leave 100% on the field? I did."
The book is Why, Gary, Why? The Jody Ploche Story. And people can look you up online. They can go to Amazon and search for Why, Gary, Why? And get a copy of that book there delivered to your door. People say it's just a wonderful resource. You've helped so many different people over the years. And Jody, I'm so pleased and I'm so honored that you would spend this much time with us to talk about your story on KMOX.
Hey, thank you for having me. I'm very grateful.
And seriously, Jody, I mean, you're doing amazing work. I know people say it all the time, but you are helping a ton of people. I hope you realize that. And I know it's a burden. It probably feels like a burden sometimes, but keep it up, man, and keep doing it, because you're a godsend for what you're doing.
And that's why I wrote the book.
Thank you, Jody. It's Jody Ploche. And again, Why, Gary, Why is the name of the book. You can find on Amazon. It's his story. And wow, did we just spend an amazing hour with him. We're going to put this story up online at KMOX.com in the podcast section where we put all of our shows.
You've been listening to Profiles. If you missed any of this episode or want to hear other profiles, go to KMOX.com and click on demand.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.